We'll do that like that. Okay, this is the Strong Women Podcast on KEXE, KBXE. I'm Heidi Holton.
Laura Conley.
We are here. This is our off-air Strong Women Podcast, and we're getting ready. Next week is our next focus group. We're going to be in Brainerd at the We Are Clinic. We're excited to be in a different town again and to be talking about strong women and talking about bodies, because we're in this women's clinic, which I think will be interesting. The place will actually play a part of that conversation. So we've been brainstorming that, but we want to talk about some of the things we've experienced lately.
Yeah. So we just went to a movie together.
Yes.
Was that 2 weeks ago? Last week?
2 weeks ago.
And full disclosure, before we talk about this, I just want to say that I had a little talk with myself on the way over here because I didn't want to sound super angry.
Because we're not supposed to be angry,
no.
Right?
So I don't know what that all means, but...
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. I think... So we're talking about the movie Bombshell. I think it's interesting because... I'm using the Minnesota term interesting, which means it actually is more than that, right?
There's a lot
going on. Kind of pisses me off that the Academy Awards, Charlize Theron was up for Best Actress, and I didn't think she would win. Didn't necessarily think it was one of the best films of the year. Wasn't up for the best film. But what it did win for was, like, Best Makeup.
Really?
And then the other movie I loved this year, Little Women, won for Best Costumes. And that kind of pissed me off.
Sure.
Right? Especially because with the Little Women, this sidebar, Greta Gerwig did a rewrite of the story everyone knows of Little Women, and she directed it, and she was not up for the director category. No women were nominated this year. But I thought it was interesting as everyone's talking about films leading up to the Oscars, and that's the kind of stuff I pay attention to. It was practically the religion growing up in my family. We all watched Oscars together and into pop culture. Nobody seemed to take Bombshell seriously.
I wonder why not. What do you think that's about, really?
Well, I heard one woman say... a progressive liberal woman say they wouldn't go to it because it was about Fox News.
Oh.
And I didn't think that was the main story of that, was that it was Fox News.
Why don't you tell what the movie's about?
And then I want to also say how interesting it was from your point of view.
Yeah, because I didn't even know that this had happened.
Right. And you haven't watched Fox News.
Right.
Yeah. So there's that interesting things. So, Bombshell is the story of Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson, Minnesota native, and the toppling of the power structure at Fox News, meaning Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly, of this system-wide cover-up of sexual assault and harassment there. And from what I have seen, I saw a couple interviews with Charlize Theron. She had a big hand in how the story was told. She wasn't just an actress in it. She was a producer in it as well and had some great performances. But she also went into it not a Fox News watcher, not feeling like she would ever want to understand Megyn Kelly. Megyn Kelly was a very provocative, ultra-right commentator that a lot of women wasn't necessarily someone who would have championed women's rights. And so I think it was a hard project for her to take on, but she knew it was a universal story. So anyway, that's kind of the story of this film. I thought it was well done, well acted by especially the women in it.
I did too. I was just blown away by how well they captured the impact that it had. Who's the young...
Margot Robbie.
Okay, so her character.
Yeah.
So do you remember the scene where she's crying on the phone outside the restaurant because she's talking to her friend about, I need to come forward. Here's what happened.
Yeah.
And that moment for me was really real. Like, they did a super good job showing how this plays out in individual women's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's detrimental to our souls. Is what that moment in the movie felt like.
Right.
So here's a question I had for you about it. Do you since I didn't watch Fox News before and I haven't watched it since we've seen the movie, and part of what the movie is kind of trying to show is this idea that women need to wear short skirts, they have to have nice legs, and mm-hmm. you should show those body parts, mm-hmm. the objectification thing, because it works.
Right.
People watch that. They want to see that.
They have a glass desk so that you can see their legs behind the glass.
Yeah. And the character in the movie, Roger's character, was, you know, constantly telling, show more legs.
Yeah.
So has that changed on Fox News, like where they don't do that as much, or are they still doing that?
I think they're still doing that.
Okay.
I don't watch Fox News regularly. I wish that I watched some of their things that were less biased, because they have like a MSNBC, which is liberal biased. They have some programming that are traditional news journalists, like Chris Wallace is on Fox News. His father was on 60 Minutes. He's a trusted journalist. And so the program he does is less opinion, where a Bill O'Reilly, who used to be there, it was all opinion, is all it was this political sort of stuff. So I would be curious to note the difference between that. They also have like a morning, they showed part of this with Gretchen Carlson. She used to be on Fox and Friends. That's the morning show. That's the show that President Trump is on all the time. He calls into constantly now. And it still has a couple pretty women flanked by some men running the show. Just visually from what I've seen in clips of it. But I don't watch Fox News enough to really know that kind of thing. And we're going to pull Sarah Bignall into this in a bit, and she may know more of that too.
Okay. So just like when you think about this focus group we have coming up about objectification.
Yes.
And so part of this process for me that's fascinating is, first, we have to take the time to listen to what people are experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, like, give us the room to be mad and hurt about all of it, because it's very, very, it's infuriating.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like we are justified and it's okay for us to feel that way.
Yeah, but you just came in and apologized.
I know. That's what I mean. There's a level of that's constantly operating against us, because when we act mad, or when we feel mad and act on that, right, like talk in that way, we get put in a box that we're just angry women.
Yeah.
When actually, rightfully so.
Yeah.
And so I have this thinking happening through all of this where I'm wondering, okay, so we listen to the stories, we come to understand what's actually happening, we allow women to feel how they feel about it all, but then how do we get to be a part of the actual change? So if the movie, you know, if it's symbolic of kind of what happened in that, in Fox News,
mm-hmm.
why hasn't it changed things for women at Fox News?
Yeah.
You know, how does that actually happen?
Right. I think it probably has behind the scenes, because honestly, most of this movie was what it was like off air for the women who worked at Fox News. It wasn't necessarily about Megyn Kelly's show. We would see occasional things of when they're on the air. My hope would be that it has changed, because they did fire Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly. But as they left that movie, the disgusting thing was they had flashed up just the words of
the dollar amount.
Yeah. All the women, the payouts equaled, and it was a big number. It was like 50 million. But it was like, you know, what, 15, 20 women? More than that?
Yeah.
And then they fired Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly, and
Roger Ailes got more money than all those women combined.
Yes.
As a firing present.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was also a statement to, yes, maybe they got those two guys out, but you didn't leave that Rupert Murdoch, who then took over for it, and his sons were a part of it. You didn't leave that movie thinking like everything's going to be okay.
No, not at all. That's what I mean. I just wonder to, like, when will we actually see the impact of people listening and hearing what's going on with women, really? And so, like, another thing that we've done recently together, somebody asked us a question of, we were talking about sexual harassment, and they said, well, aren't there laws in place? Why?
Yes, yeah.
And so for me, I think about that in terms of, yes, there are laws in place, and yes, you can have policies in place in the workforce, but unless those are created and come from, designed from the very people who are experiencing the problem, they're typically not going to work in a way to affect change that we need. So, in other words, a lot of the laws and the policies that are in place are still about kind of keeping victims either quiet
Right.
or the victims have to prove this is happening and you better be like a really good victim.
Right. The appropriate victim. Now I have the hiccup, so that's going to be fun. But
Yeah.
I do know, because we both have talked about and have read or are reading the Ronan Farrow book about the Harvey Weinstein case. And I did recently hear him in a podcast talk about that California and maybe other places is changing law having to do with NDAs that women end up having to sign.
So
So,
those are the non-disclosure agreements
yes, so that you
saying,
cannot, if it's a criminal activity, they don't apply.
so you could talk about it if there was a criminal activity.
Yes.
So then we need the crime law, the criminal law to
Right.
show.
So there's an instance where there is maybe some change happening, right? It
Okay.
may not be what we want. And I was going to say, in answer to that question that you have, we're doing this program.
Yes.
I mean, it's not changing how Fox News is running or, that kind of thing. But little by little, we're meeting up with women and it's small numbers. It's not like, okay, we're changing the entire world, but we are having some of these conversations. But what I wonder about, and it's the same as any of the work I do at KEXE, is if we're preaching to the choir, right?
Sure.
In the same way that I felt like any guy I talk to, except Scott Hall, I will put that qualifier in there. He liked Bombshell. Seemed to have no interest in going to Bombshell. So, is it just going to be women like you and I and Sarah who are going to go to a film like that, who are going to support it, so that it's never going to get the status where other films can be made like this about serious topics in women's lives because it costs so much to make these kinds of things? So does it feels sort of hopeless in some ways. Although it was a major motion picture, we saw it in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And so it was widespread, and certainly after this point, it goes to streaming and all that stuff, and hopefully more people will watch it. But does it matter? Does it make change if it doesn't go to the people who watch Fox News, who run Fox News? Or, I mean, not specific to that case, but sometimes it's hard to think that. Ha holding listening sessions for women in northern Minnesota means anything.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think, I think you're right in terms of realizing that change happens in different ways, and us doing this and listening to women and talking about it and kind of pulling out what's going on with all of us isn't, it's a good strategy to change things, right?
Yeah.
But I also kind of wonder if we as a people really understood what a cost this was to us, like think about how much headspace it takes up in women to constantly be worrying about your appearance and the ways in which the one way that, well, there are way there are a handful of ways, but one of the very definite, unique ways that women are universally oppressed is through the objectification and sexualization of us as people.
Right.
I mean, hands down, it's crazy, and the impact that it's having on us as women is also having a huge impact on the whole of society. Because there's a cost to it. If, I mean, if we could quantify the amount of headspace that we spend as women worrying about our appearance, whether we want to be or not, or if we're conscious of it or not, we would be blown away.
Right.
And that the movie kind of highlighted that for me. So you have these women who, you know, they're doing these things with men in power, allowing, I don't know what word to use, because it's not really like they have a choice in the matter, quite frankly. They're in this structure and this system where if you don't play by those rules, you're not going to have a job.
Right, right.
I mean,
and you're going to be, as one woman in it, Kate McKinnon from Saturday Night Live, she played a lesbian producer off air who had completely different politics than Fox News, but she knew if she said something,
she'd get fired.
And then she would never get a job again.
Yeah.
Because they would blacklist her.
Yeah.
And it's, which is the same concept as the Ronan Farrow work, Catch and Kill, of buying stories of women to then hide those stories. It's effectively NDAs. So say the Harvey Weinstein, anybody who had accused Harvey Weinstein and who had signed a non-disclosure, that story was bought by the National Enquirer so that no one could ever tell it again.
Yeah.
That's what catch and kill means, is you catch that story and then you kill it. So there were all these stories. And so I was just listening to something yesterday about this. More of Ronan Farrow has a podcast that interviews the people he focuses on in the book. And he was talking about that during leading up to the 2016 election, it's like 80% of the headlines were about Trump and they were positive about Trump, and the other 20% were negative about Hillary Clinton. And they had bought up all these women. They had bought their story so it wouldn't get out to any other media. You know, because to me, I didn't understand that until I started to read the book or to understand the level of it. Like, what would it matter? I would never look at a headline for the National Enquirer and think that it was true.
Right.
You know, so it seemed like, well, that's superficial, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, the New York Times would probably still do the story. But they buy off the women so they would never tell the story. And they buy them off for millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And, you know, a working actress, a working model, the one I heard yesterday was a woman who had been a preschool teacher who would then went from Michigan, and then she became a model, and then she got an agent, and she became a Playboy model, and that's how she met Donald Trump. And a Playboy bunny, and, you know, never expected that's what her life would end up as. But she was pretty successful compared to life as a preschool teacher in Michigan, but she still didn't have any agency to not sell that story because she'd be done for in any career she would possibly do after that. So she took the couple million dollars, you know?
Yeah. And it's like a definite misuse of an abuse of power to, like, so here are your options, women. You can try to make your dreams come to fruition. And mm-hmm. when you're trying to do that, you're going to get harassed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you can do about the harassment is you can take a bunch of money to never talk about it again.
And then what does that even do to a person, right?
Right. Or you can fight back and just have your whole life ruined.
Right. Either way, life is ruined, to tell you the truth, right? Because
yep.
you wouldn't feel good about that money you took.
And or you can just accept the blame for being harassed. I mean, I just, like, if we just pull back and be real clear about what we're talking here.
Yeah.
This is not... It's not set up for us to do well.
No, the system is screwed, isn't it? I'm gonna, we're gonna invite Sarah Bignall to come into this conversation because we've been talking. Because
she was kind of angry too about it. I mean, we all were angry.
I like that you were pretty firm in that we are going out after the movie to talk.
Oh, yeah, we needed to talk about it.
And I, you know, I feel like I'm a pretty lucky person. I don't have the story of being sexually harassed in a workplace.
But we all
But then once we talked about it more and we talked about
stuff.
Yeah, then I was like, oh, because I've gotten that from men. Like, well, how can you talk about it? It never happened to you. You know, like if even my brother is like that. Like he doesn't get that my sister-in-law was in situations that he would have never been in, even though he's super supportive of my sister-in-law. And he doesn't see that that's wrong, that women have to act differently, because she never had, like, She was not raped at work, right? She was not this level of it.
Right.
We're recording as we're being very casual.
You're being casual.
And Sarah has a loud voice, but we're going to move it a little bit this way. Sarah Bignall is joining our conversation
now. Here she comes.
We have talked somewhat about Bombshell.
Oh.
And then there was a couple questions I said, let's save it for Sarah because she might know more about it.
Oh, boy.
Which
no pressure.
Well, the interesting thing I thought was we went into that, you and I sort of understanding Fox News.
Yeah.
Laura had no idea really what Fox News was like. So that was a cool thing for us in our conversation afterwards. But your question about
that? Well, I just wondered if after everything had gone down at Fox News, and if you watch it now, have things changed in terms of seeing a lot of legs and pretty faces? And
there's still a lot of pretty faces and legs, and I don't know that it completely shifted the culture that's existing there.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you break that down? I mean, how?
Right.
Right. So that's kind of the bigger question we're grappling with is, you know, we're objectified at epic proportions women. So how do we really affect and know that change is happening? I feel like we would see it. We would feel it.
Yeah. Well, and even like what I'm wearing today here, I feel pretty in it. And I you know, I kind of have a deep V-neck here. And it's the, am I wearing this because it's something that I've chosen to wear, or is it outside influences, you know, driving those decisions?
Sure.
And I grapple with that, which is completely crazy. I'm a 40-year-old woman. I should just
wear what you want.
I should just wear what I want.
Yeah, because I think for the longest time, and I learn a lot from you, Sarah. You're good about like clothes and looks and what, how it makes you feel.
Yeah.
I don't mean to say that you're superficial, but I think for the longest time, because I majored, and maybe you felt this way too, Laura, because we both majored in women's studies, right? That I felt like if I'm going to be a feminist, that I should not really look like a woman, or I shouldn't spend a lot of time on my looks. And, you know, after college, I moved into, you know, different things, but I think I kind of kept that up of not wanting to, and I think people who are heavier sometimes do this too, is you just don't even want to be in the world where you get objectified, and so you go overboard on how you dress.
Yeah.
Because you feel weird about your body, because your body doesn't show up in mass media.
So going over...
But is it, sometimes I wonder, is it superficial for me to want to wear something cute I feel good in? Or, I mean, it can be very complicated, but I've learned over the years, if I feel confident in my physical body and how I look, mm-hmm. I do a better job at whatever I'm doing.
Yes, I would agree with that statement. And working in public radio is not known for loads of makeup and, you know.
And she's got her Ariana Grande ponytail.
I have my high pony. I have some false eyelashes in. I have a tight skirt on. And I feel good. I feel good about
you
the way
good.
The way that I look. But it's the, well, because of where I work and what I do, is this appropriate?
Right.
And I constantly question, like, well, should I be wearing that? But to go back to what Heidi said of when I feel and dress and have makeup and that sort of stuff on, I feel like I can take on the world.
Sure. I always just kind of wear what I want, but I also have experienced the implications of that. Like just when you were talking and you, I have this memory of, it was probably like 5 years ago, I was actually at a local fundraiser for a nonprofit, and the shirt I was wearing was kind of low cut, and this guy at my table leaned over and goes, maybe you should cover up your cleavage. I mean, and you know, like I'm not real busty. I'm not like a super busty person, right.
But
that's...
Well, who's his place to be? What did you say to him?
I was like, are you joking me right now?
Yeah.
I mean, I was just like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what women are dealing with on like a very minimal...
Yeah, you're at a
fundraiser
for
that's not even like what
Itasca
I would...
County,
would somebody
you know?
Would... qualify as sexual harassment.
No.
It, but it's very much an external view and opinion on what we wear and how we show up. I would never ask a man.
Could you cover that up?
Do you
I'm think... seeing a little too much chest hair there.
Yeah. Too much.
Button that up,
I
buddy.
I can see your balls.
Yeah.
Your
like...
it's a hot area. Yeah. Okay. Like... But it doesn't happen in the same way. And then as Laura always points out, what is all this thought doing? What are better things we could be thinking about?
Oh my God,
head,
it takes up
right?
so much space in us.
100%.
And energy that's...
100%.
Wasted.
And I have a teenage daughter, and she's kind of the polar opposite, I think, because she lives with me, and she's very minimal makeup, and she has a unique sense of style and that sort of stuff, and I think that that's super,
absolutely
super cool, and I embrace that. It's the, hey, if you're uncomfortable, you know, or comfortable in that as your appearance into the world, then go ahead, man. Like,
yeah, definitely.
Go for it.
Okay, let's go back to the movie here.
Yes.
So just kind of think back when it was over and the initial feelings you were having.
For me it was caused some pause because I think so many times women will go at each other and will attack each other, even though we have opportunities, I think, to be compassionate and kind. And that isn't what our first reaction to things are. It's the, how are you dressing? You know, why did you go up to his office? Why were you doing that? And instead of being like, oh my gosh, that must have been terrible for you, and come to a spot of compassion. Because if you look at what was happening with Margot Robbie's character, you know, she goes to her one friend at work and her friend's like, I can't talk to you anymore. But how many of us have been in situations like that, you know, either being the person who's receiving the information instead of being empathetic and compassionate to them, we're like, eh.
Well, and to see that, like, to me, that was one of the most striking things, was that that was part of the intention of the power structure there, was that women wouldn't talk to each other.
Yes.
They were encouraged to be competitive and angry with each other. And I know that's the stereotype of women, cat fights, you know, that kind of turns men on. Apparently, I'm going to be the dirty one in this conversation today. But to know that I know someone intentionally set that up, but that was actually set up for that situation that was going on. Like, that was shocking to me that they would get that level of cover up.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make
like the fact that it's totally by design that you want to have horizontal hostility between women. Because it keeps us down.
Mm-hmm.
You want to divide and conquer if mm-hmm. you're trying to make people less than. I mean, it's real. It's a real thing. I mean, of course, if all it was through all those women, well, a handful of them coming together and saying, this happened to me. And if you get enough women doing that,
what was amazing, and so by the time that I'm completely blanking on the main, not Nicole Kidman, but the other one, Megyn Kelly, her character, when she finally went in for the when she finally went in for the interview and she looks down and she sees that her letter that she's given was like a W, and she's like, are you telling me that there have been that many other people in to see you? I think that in Megyn Kelly's mind that she was going to be A. She was like the first person, or, you know, would be B. And the fact that there were other women that came forward, I think it sheds light on how big of an issue it is and how isolated all those women were to have no clue that this was happening to others.
Yeah, it isolates you. But then when you see that, right, like mm-hmm. A through W has already come forward. Oh my gosh, I did not cause this.
Yeah.
This is a thing that is being done to me.
It's not your personal problem.
Yep, it isn't because I was pretty or like showed my legs, or it's because this is a thing that is happening to a lot of us.
So your comment on women being pretty, you know, there's a responsibility. If I dress with makeup and let's say I have a little cleavage showing, there's some risk going out into the world presenting yourself that way, because, you know, men can say inappropriate things, you know, you might, but it's somehow my fault that I'm doing that. But the standard doesn't exist for men, because there's a lot of gorgeous men out there that have very, you know, desirable bodies, but are they being catcalled and objectified the way in which women are? And the answer is no.
Now, you're going to have a handful of men who will say, yes, we are. Yes.
Right. Especially the, you know, the kind of men that maybe I come into contact with in life, who, you know, are working in nonprofits or, you know, raising families who may be a little chubby or lost their hair or, you know, any of these things that make them feel not as manly. Yeah. And so they feel like they understand.
But it's very different.
But they're not having the thoughts of, I need to be careful where I park my car in a parking lot because there's some safety risk for me to do that. Or I need to check to see what time of day it is and how long my event's going to go so I know I'm going to be safe going from point A to point B, and whether those risks actually exist or they're so ingrained in us that you have to be, you're constantly at risk of being, you know, raped and assaulted at all times. Totally. It's exhausting. It is super exhausting.
We've said that before. Like, imagine if we didn't have to put our energy towards that, what we could do.
Well, and for 100%.
And you have a very smart daughter. She's no doubt going to go on to college. One of the things I was struck by, and it was, now I look back on this, and it, I mean, looking back like a year and a half ago, it was dumb of me to think that women had gotten over this in college, because I just remember so much, and it was partially because I was going from Brainerd, Minnesota to downtown Minneapolis, to the University of Minnesota, and my mother was on high alert at all times. Thank God there weren't cell phones there then, because she would have made me call her after and before every class, because I took night classes, because a lot of times I worked during the day. And but I, my mother forced me to carry mace with me. You know, there were all these things. She would say, what time's your class done? Call me when you get home. You know, and I would, a lot of times I'd have a, I'd park on East Bank. I maybe had something there, but then I had something on the West Bank later. And I would run as fast as I could across the long bridge, you know, because I was terrified to be out that late at night and then to go in the parking ramp, you know. What are you going to tell your daughter? Are you going to, I mean, because there are some shitty men.
Yes.
Well, it's very real. It happens every day, all the time.
But how do you do that without clogging up all the things she's going to learn in college?
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, so we
yeah, it's up to you. You don't want her to only operate from a, you don't want her to be naive.
No. So we've traveled to big cities, and that we've been to Washington, D.C. We've gone to San Francisco, and that, and my daughter is one that's not an easy victim. I mean, she's one that isn't on her cell phone, and she's looking ahead at where she's going. You know, she's very present in her surroundings and that. And those are things that I've always encouraged of. It's very important of, for a variety of reasons, of one, to be aware of the people that are around you, make sure that there isn't a car careening out of, you know, control toward, you know, you need to be very aware of it. But it's hard though to not continually give her the same messages that I received. So when I was in college in the late 90s, there was a series of rapes that happened on the college campus that I was on. And so instead of sitting down all the young men that were doing the raping, you know, or could at least be facilitators and helping some of the issues that were going on, it was all the women that were on campus that were pulled together in a big symposium that happened. We were taught how to make Wolverine claws out of our keys that we had. We were to carry around rape whistles, and they considered, you know, you should maybe buy yourself some mace. And it's the, had situations been,
walk in pairs.
Yes. You can never, you can never go alone. And there were particular places on campus that this was continually happening, and it was paths that would connect like one resident hall to another resident hall or resident hall to campus. And instead of putting in better lighting, it was, no, you need to carry, you know, carry mace, walk in pairs, and not actually make it safer.
Like, don't fix the cause of the
problem. why don't you talk to the guys who are doing this, you know, and hold them accountable. It was somehow our fault that we were not walking in pairs at night.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's insane. I mean, just thinking back to the classes, then we had to do like some hand-to-hand, like, you know, nose, you know, temple. Like, they showed us like how to ward off an attacker. And
what's temple?
So you would
punch him in the temple.
Well, so if you didn't, so you should be walking with your Wolverine key.
Sure.
You
know,
we know that.
And that. So if you didn't have that, you would shove up into like their nose. Ooh, that way.
I've heard that
and,
one.
Yep. And then if you hit them hard enough with your, in the temple.
With the Wolverine key.
With the Wolverine key. I think you'd, like, that's completely dangerous. And I'm wondering how many women would end up getting charged with assault.
Yeah. You know. I'm going to go for the eyeball.
with your Wolverine keys. Yes. But yeah. And then a crotch. So it was,
Get them right in the balls. Okay, so here's something. And this is like going to be really depressed, a really depressing thought, but I think it's real. So a lot of energy is put around like the stranger danger type thing for women, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, be careful when you're out alone. But then really when you dig down deep, it's like the most intimate places that women are, it's happening to them, right? So at work, in their house, with their boyfriends, with their husbands, with their... So there's part of me that's always like, to what end? You know, like, when will we ever, like, how do we know that we have changed some of this? Like, we definitely have to see less of it in people's workplace. Mm-hmm. And then their house.
We have to have a, you know, be nice to have more women. Nice to have a female president, female governor.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just in elected.
In positions of power.
Right.
I think representation needs to be equaled out.
Yeah.
I mean, because women
that's
are.
That's a measurable
100%. And I mean, it goes beyond just the sexes. Like, we need people of every color, ethnicity, religious background.
Yeah. And it should be symbolic of the people who live here.
100%. And until you actually have an equal place at the table for everybody to sit and have input on to things, I don't think you're ever going to change the structure. And so I think that that's why it's really important to encourage young people to get involved in their communities, whether it's in leadership roles or if they run for office and that sort of stuff, that really we need to have those voices. And until you have that, I don't know. I can't see it changing.
No, yeah.
But you said this is going to be depressing. But I said, you know, we live in the state of Minnesota that we get funding from this legacy fund. That's how we're able to do Strong Women. So we're doing this podcast. We have the groups. But I think we don't understand the impact of what is happening with the work we do because it goes out over the airwaves. So even just announcing, like, next week we have our Strong Women focus group. It's Speak Up Lady about objectification of women's bodies. Like, if just someone hears that as they're getting ready in the morning, as they're putting on their awesome outfit or something, does something.
Yeah. Okay.
You know? I mean, yeah. I feel like...
I'm hopeful. I just always
No, I'm... Yeah.
It seems like we need to have a super big shift.
We do. And it feels impossible because a lot of people benefit from the way it is right now.
Yeah. I think we can totally do it. Yeah. I really, with everything in me, believe it's going to require women coming together. Mm-hmm. Because I do think that the fighting and the not wanting to support each other, or even women blaming women for what's happening to them, is very much designed to happen and is keeping us down.
Mm-hmm. So I have a son that's in high school as well, and we've had kind of consent conversations with him from a very early age on like tickling and things when they were like little, you know, because he's one who kind of would like to tickle, and we'd like, you need to ask if that's okay for you to touch other people's bodies.
Yeah.
You doing that. And I think that that's one way to, at a very young age, I mean, it was by no means sexual. It was just... is it okay if I touch you, and you know, whether I give you a hug or can I tickle you, you know, you need to
boundaries.
Yeah. You need to say that this is okay or not okay. And he's had a situation recently where it's, one of his friends was accused of doing something to one of his other friends who happens to be female. Mm-hmm. And so yesterday, actually, we were having this conversation and he's like, I believe him more than I do her. And so we're like, well, let's kind of unpack this here. Why are you feeling that? And he's like, well, girls, I just think make up things. And I said, why do you feel that? And like, he was feeling bad about that. So like, that was, I don't know why I'm feeling this way. So we were able to dialogue that, which I think is important, but I don't know how many of those conversations are existing in other households. Because I think if they were, it was a very productive conversation for the two of us of, do you think that they're, how things are just kind of set up that, you know, I think the more burden of proof falls on women to prove that.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that this event happened, to where, you know, he's like, well, I know this kid. He's always been, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I said, well, would you say the same thing about your female friend? Well, yeah. So why are you?
Well, and I think that's like a social narrative at play, in terms of that women lie.
Mm-hmm.
They're
not
evil.
Trustworthy.
Yeah, they cheat. They're, I mean, that's like a thing. And mm-hmm. so that kind of manifests in all different ways. And it manifests in people thinking that women aren't telling the truth about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When in my experience, like talking to thousands of women, 99.9% of the women are, why would you make it up?
Because it's easy, you know, because it's so easy.
Yeah, it's so easy to come forward with all of this stuff.
Well, that's a question, and, you know, I don't know that we can answer it here, but I wonder about, because you do hear people, as the Me Too movement went on, men can very easily say that, like, you can't just believe all women.
I know.
Like, so how do you have a conversation with somebody about that? I mean, you just explained how you have it with your son.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I also think people are people, right? So I will listen. I want to listen to all women, and I'm probably going to believe most women. But you don't know what's at play mental health-wise, you know, whatever. I don't think... But men want to use that as an out.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think
I don't know how to keep that conversation going, because I just don't know how to do it.
I just feel like that's another way to kind of keep things status quo in place, and because it's such a small percentage of...
Right.
You know, you're not going to worry about... I mean, it's kind of like, it reminds me, like, statistics, like, you're more likely to die from a toaster than a shark, right? But then people are super scared of sharks. It's like, what in the hell is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like,
toasters are dangerous.
So dangerous.
There's such a small percentage of women that are going to go out of their way and lie about it, or are mentally ill, and that's what you're saying.
Right.
That, why do we even go there?
I guess, and I have said sometimes, like, what benefit do you think a woman lying would get from this?
Yeah.
You know, to make them think about, like, do you think this is good that they're getting this attention, or that they're going through this, or they're now going to be labeled this the rest of their life?
Yeah. So I used to do men's group with men who batter women, and I would kind of try to dig down a little bit deeper with them about their thinking, why they think that, because a lot of them come into those groups saying, you know, the women lied, that they're just there because...
So would they have acknowledgement of the battering or whatever it is that they would do, or have they somehow rationalized and justified that she did things?
They have most certainly, they actually believe that, they come to kind of believe they're the victim in the situation, right? Like, if she wasn't so crazy, if she didn't cheat, if they didn't have to deal with what she was doing, they wouldn't do what they do. Or they also like to, you know, I was super wasted, I beat the crap out of her. And I used to always joke around, you know, like, nobody's ever saying I'm super wasted, I French kissed my grandma, you know, like, things that are so outlandish that, like, why is it okay to get super wasted and then beat the crap out of your partner? I don't know. These things to me are always really illogical. But I think questioning why, and at the end of the day, a big belief system that was operating was that women, like, are evil. I mean, this is throughout history has been, mm-hmm. it's in the Bible. I mean, we could just go so far with that.
Come home.
But, right? Yes.
Right? Ugh.
I think it's real. And we have to deal with it and change it. And we need men to not participate in that. We need men to see that just questioning, like, well, women, you can't believe them all, is not helpful.
No.
Mm. Not at all.
And, you know, I've told you this before, but I've had a man say to me, referred to now as the post-Me Too movement, or we're post-Me Too.
Yes. I don't like that.
It's
like,
still,
what?
That dawns on me a lot. It angers
we're
me
just
to
getting
no
started.
End.
No, they want the book to close and go back to how it was. Okay, we heard you. We're acknowledging things, but let's just go back to how things were. the status quo is just so comfortable.
And it's just like the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, 100%. Wait, my kids are reading The Crucible, or they both, within the last, like, year, have read The Crucible. You know, like, such uplifting, the Salem witch trials. Uh-huh. And that's led to some interesting conversations as well. I mean, but look at how far back that goes, too, totally. You know?
Yeah. Yes.
So I said that to bring it back to Bombshell. So I said that. Not that we have to, but I just want to... When it feels like there isn't movement or there isn't change, right? When it feels hopeless a little bit, like I was saying, are people even seeing the movie? Or are they just saying that's what Fox News is like? Or, you know, all these things. But if you think about the three of us going to that movie, and then I said I was glad that Laura was super bossy and said we have to go out afterwards. But if you think about it, we weren't sad, that conversation. We were empowered to talk about ourselves.
Yeah. And I think, so if you, my kind of reflection on Bombshell as a movie of all the people that had things to lose, the women had the most to lose in that situation. Because Roger Ailes was still going to be sitting fine. He got a nice hefty payout.
He got more money than all of them together.
Oh, 100%. Like, what's most frustrating of the whole thing, of the why would women risk so much, and in this case, you know, Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson and stuff. I mean, they're essentially wrecking their careers. I mean,
they're not on anymore.
They're not on. They're deemed unhirable, you know, because of all of this.
Even though they won.
Yes. And it's a sad state of things. So when you look at stories like this, so if you are working in an environment to where similar things are going on, I mean, you have so much to lose by speaking up. And it's wrong. It's frustrating. It's sad. And it's wrong. And until things fundamentally change, that we start valuing women. I mean, I think that's what it boils down to.
True. I agree. So, like, I feel hopeful and I feel like we can change it. For me, it's always like, as women, we need some tangible thinking about how do we measure that the change is happening in a way that works for us, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, if we could name three things, one, right? Like, our livelihood and our work should never be attached to our bodies, mm-hmm. what we wear, right? So that's like mm-hmm. a huge mm-hmm. thing.
Right.
We should be believed. Mm-hmm. We should be valued. I mean, there's certain stuff that we just need to be really clear about, that until we see that, we don't think that the change is happening that we need. Mm-hmm. I think we can do it.
So is it holding each other more accountable for that? I mean, because I have started to pump the brakes on myself. And even when I hear friends of mine or people that I interact with going down quite negative paths towards other women, it's the, we need to, like, what are we
need to stop doing that.
What are we doing?
Yeah. We should always say that when that's happening.
What are we doing? It's insane.
Right.
Absolutely. We need to have each other.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And a lot of times, I mean, even as nice as you can be to your friends, how easy is it to kind of flip that switch? And
yeah. Well, no, women don't trust other women. I mean, it's part of the story.
Right.
And I think I even text Heidi going to Bombshell and that sort of stuff. And I'm like, I don't trust other women.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't, 100%.
I was shocked by that statement because I've never thought that in my head before. I'm, mm-hmm. It may be there. But you have thought it enough that you typed it out to me in a text.
Yeah.
And then we talked a little bit about it. I was going to say, I think you and I are both very proud of that. We're very good coworkers. We're good friends. And we've been through a lot together. Mm-hmm. You know, we started this roller derby league in town that was super empowering for a lot of women. It was a really good thing. And it spiraled out of control because of the, you know, the way things are set up and how women are used to interacting with each other. We also acknowledge each other's experience in it. I didn't have the same experience you did. So we can, but I mean, it's kind of a freaking miracle.
Mm-hmm. That you have a trusting relationship now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because part of it was, I wouldn't have even, you maybe would have applied here or that kind of thing, but if I had been a more vindictive person, or you and I hadn't had some personal connection, because mm-hmm. I had a big hand in, this sounds weird, I'm deploying a power, but in hiring you, mm-hmm. you know, and that kind of thing doesn't always happen. We're in a smaller scale. We did that work.
Mm-hmm.
But do we always remember that? Like, I even try to do it in, I know you're not a social media person. By the way, I'm very proud of you about that, Laura. But
so jealous.
I try to do that even on social media to be really positive and mm-hmm. not in a fake way, not in a like, have a grateful day, you know. But be positive to people, like, even if I don't know them well and they post something they're doing or they're, you know, like, it feels good to me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it gets me over, like, why didn't anybody say that? I mean, I generally don't post my what I've accomplished or whatever, but small ways, you know?
Well, and think about, so you text that before we went to the movie mm-hmm. to hide?
Oh, yeah, and you also wondered if Laura was okay with you coming.
Yes.
Because you guys don't know each other that well. And here's the funny thing. So I forgot to ask Laura. I knew she'd be fine with it. I know the kind of woman she is, right? And then I was like, oh, crap, I better ask her. Because I had already said to you, yeah, she's fine with it, but I hadn't actually asked her.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent her a thing, and she thought I meant someone else. And she goes, oh, my God, is she going to have her baby at the thing?
At the movie?
She said, bring, and I said, no, big no. And then she goes, oh, great. Like, her response was still great.
Yeah.
You know? But I just think it's very funny. You wondered about those things.
Mm-hmm.
But then what's most fascinating about it is the afterwards. Like, we had a pretty, like, we all kind of disclosed some close to our heart stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, like, we trusted each other in that moment. And that, to me, is, like, how you just have that with women in a way that, I mean, you have really good men friends and you love your partner and whatever, but they haven't experienced this stuff in the same way that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when we can get past this, like, distrust of each other and do that, it's actually really cool.
Yeah.
And helpful.
100% it's helpful. And to go back to, like, the derby thing and my like, I don't know how much has been manifested in my mind. I think you have certain events that kind of mm-hmm. happen in your life. And so you can point to those things of, like, this is how I'm feeling. This is how I'm guarding myself because this happened when I was in fourth grade. This happened to me when I was in high school. This happened to me as an adult. And instead of looking at, one, my responsibility, you know, because there are certain, you know, I was a participant in some of those things. Of there's some ownership.
You could be self-reflective.
Yeah, you know, you look at that too. But is it what I'm putting out there of, like, I can't trust other women? Is that really? Am I just reevaluating, or you know what I mean? Am I just validating that belief?
Yeah, is it a self-fulfilling?
Yes, and I don't know. So it's caused to pump the brakes a little bit and be like, you know what, you can trust people. But I'm much more selective in the
mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's a process.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it is, like, what you're saying is just coming to see it. Like, that's a story in our head that has been built up over time based on what we've learned, been told, and also our experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And so to kind of take a moment to step back and do what ultimately time typically allows, to see the thinking in your mind and, like, what is real?
Mm-hmm.
Women definitely need to do that.
Yeah.
And one thing we need to do is figure out how to trust each other and come together around these things, because they're huge and they're happening a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think we just solved everything, don't you?
Keep talking.
We'll keep listening, keep doing the trusting. I was thinking, I was kind of half thinking, like, I wonder if anyone will listen to this. Pretty long conversation. We may cut it up into a few. I know one person who will listen, and thank you. Thank you, Kitty, for listening. And it'll mean something to her. So
good.
Probably more Thanks, than Kitty. That. And you can send us an email if you listened and have something to say about it. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks.